Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 563. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
You know, the days keep on going on. Things keep on getting accomplished. I suppose I'm not going to argue. I wish I was, doing something more than just housework, but hey, it's something. And occasionally getting to watch extra television, which really has happened a lot less than I would have thought, considering that we're going on week three of these shenanigans. One thing that definitely has kept me on my toes, and something that I am used to. The old getting furloughed happened to a bunch of WWE wrestlers this past weekend after, well, this past week after we recorded. And that was quite a list of people that got released. But, I mean, was there anyone really that was a surprise?
Not necessarily anyone surprising of the list. Definitely the one that stuck out the most as someone who should have been a main eventer for years and years already, and for many years to come. Rusev seemed to be the biggest name of the active wrestlers on the list.
Yeah, he definitely sticks out. Is someone that, it's kind of funny for all of the shit that, because I guess I would argue that Zack Ryder is probably the second biggest name on that list. I guess both of them are not surprising that they were let go given their current statuses within the company. Zack Ryder had two big WrestleMania moments, but, oh boy, has there been precious little in between those moments.
Right, yeah.
Rusev definitely had a maintained push when he first came up as a heel. I think everyone kind of agrees that the coolest WrestleMania entrance ever was his downfall. I think Vince was pissed at him ever since he had a better entrance than any of Triple H's. Just a wild accusation on my part, not at all damning. But, I mean, that is where things started to go wrong, wasn't it? Because he loses to John Cena, and he never really got his groove back after that.
No. Really not as a heel, not now, fast forward 2 years after that, he could have had a massive, massive babyface run when Rusev Day got over, huge. And they just did not pull the trigger at all on it.
Yes. Yeah, that's one that it's just like, I guess I'm surprised that, or I'm not surprised that he got let go, but it's one where it's just like, how does this guy even want, there are a bunch of guys where I can understand if you'd want to come back. He's definitely on the list of, I think you're insane if you want to come back. Because, yeah, his treatment the last couple of years, like you said, like, not going with that push is just, that's always, to me, that's one of those most damning, oh, hey, just let the guys get over and we'll push you. And just seeing that happen, it's just like, nah, there's more that goes into it than just getting over. Because he was, I mean, that was still kind of one of the craziest reactions for someone non-pushed for a sustained period.
Right, yeah, no. Yeah, no, he really had not been pushed very hard in the certainly in the year previous to it. It's a throwaway line in a comedy segment with Aiden English. Then it just gets really, really over, and every day is Rusev Day, and yeah, no, it should have led to a huge babyface run that never happened.
Yeah, it's it'll be one of those great ifs, I suppose, and it's another one where a lot of these guys, it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. I mean, I feel bad for them in and of the fact that they cannot really seek employment at this current moment.
Yeah, that's the really shitty part of all of this, that just WWE, you know, just hoarding talent and hoarding talent for years, it seemed. Just paying people to sit at home or sit in catering, be barely used, and then they let them go when there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people where I don't feel that bad. Because if I'm not mistaken, Gallows and Anderson just somewhat recently re-signed, did they not?
Yeah, they did, to a very, very large guarantee for their push. $500,000 each for their role. it was quite a bit.
yeah, I mean, I guess that's where, you know, because I guess I already saw the, you know, of course, the blame WWE, you know, they were hoarding the talent, which they were. But then there are people like them where, I mean, by the time they re-signed, I think AEW was at least an idea, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a solid, real thing, but and those guys had to have known. Like it felt like it's at least for definitely for Styles, and it sounded like really even for Gallows and Anderson that they were kind of ready to not just be in Japan all the time. You know, and they wanted to wrestle for a domestic wrestling company, and unfortunately for the money that they were wanting, the WWE was the only option. And I guess this is one where they had enough time where they could have sat out, because I guess you never know what was promised in negotiations, but they didn't really get a whole lot of anything for what, for the money that they were given. You know, that really is just paying someone just to keep. Am I talking myself into the WWE being bad, even though they decided to sign the deals? Is that what I'm doing, Chris?
I think you are. I mean, I think. If you sign someone to that much money, you should try to get the most out of your investment. some guys just aren't content to do nothing for their money. They actually want to be out there having, you know, world caliber matches. It's the Revival thing. The Revival was never gonna. It doesn't seem like they were gonna re-sign no matter what happened.
Well, and there are ones that I feel bad for. And like, even though I've kind of had my, you know, I don't always think they're as great as some of our other friends think, but I do think that they're better than what the WWE gave to them. And you always need to say that the Revival got their push well in NXT, but it was when they came to the main roster that things went sideways for them. And, yeah, they were never going to re-sign, And they are ones that I genuinely feel bad for. Like, I guess to me, it's always one of those, like, case-by-case basises. Like, if Gallows and Anderson knew that they were taking 500K, but the chances were good that they were still just going to sit there and, well, at least in Carl Anderson's case, continue to work out and grow abs on abs, at least. You know, I don't feel bad for them, but the Revival's kind of been looking to get out for, I feel like, years, plural, at this point. I mean, has it really been that long that they've kind of been feuding with management?
Yeah, it's probably been, yeah, it's definitely been well over a year. You know, I know there was injury issues. I wouldn't know exactly where to pinpoint it, but I know that they've been Raw or SmackDown Tag Team Champions about 4 or 5 times since the first time they publicly declared that they wanted to leave and they weren't happy.
Yeah, I mean, that was always the weird thing with some of these ones, is that they'd get some type of push when they made an uproar, but then, like, 5 minutes later, they'd not be champions, too. Like, right. Whether it's them or someone else. You know, like, because I feel like Mike Bennett got some TV time after one of the times he started grousing. But then, you know, his cuckolding angle just wasn't as good as the other cuckolding angles. So he got bumped off TV again. I'm not saying that he's on the level of the Revival or Anderson and Gallows, but, you know, I would think that he has some level of name recognition, at least. Yeah. And I guess I kind of feel bad for him, because he's another one that asked for his release a while ago and didn't get it, and now is getting it. You know, like, yeah. So I'm a mixed bag on who I have sympathy for and who I don't have sympathy for that is in this released pile. Because I guess the big thing, and I'm assuming because they're independent contractors, they can't seek unemployment. Do you know about that one way or the other?
The self-employed and gig workers are supposed to be able to get unemployment now under the CARES Act, I believe. I think they can try.
yeah, then they're just like a whole lot of other people then. I mean, yeah, if they can get some type of a check, I guess, you know, they're kind of in the system like some others of us who unfortunately have been stuck in the same situation. I don't know if that's why I don't have as much sympathy in some ways. I think that a lot of the people that do have name recognition will either A, re-sign with the WWE if and when this thing comes out, or B, I don't know if they'll all sign with AEW, but I definitely think that there's enough out there that I wonder if people are changing their mind on being just the backstage people, you know, the catering people. Like, there's no one on this list that I don't think any of them are going to end up earning a lot of TV time within the WWE, because there are probably people that are even better waiting in the wings. Is that a fair way to say things?
I mean, people who have yet to have been, well, that, you know, I guess that, yes, if you're not counting NXT, there are certainly, you know, people who have not been, I would say, ruined by bad creative and by years of start and stop pushes and eventually just ground the fans down into not believing in them. Yeah, I mean, WWE probably needed a house cleaning for a while, but it's to do it during a pandemic. In their minds, be forced into it, and then throw these guys into a market that doesn't exist after years of not utilizing them. That's the shitty part.
Yeah. And I guess always the interesting thing is that I feel like on a whole, the wrestlers themselves haven't complained about it much, or is that just me? Like, the actual wrestlers that were released?
No, none of them are really complaining. It'd be bad for them to complain, and you're just good, publicly, take your lumps and try to move on.
Yeah.
It's just where to move on to, since AEW is going to have to pick up filming in the next, 3 to 4 weeks, I believe.
Oh.
But I don't know if I see them, signing any new wrestlers. Maybe they already had it in their minds that, the revival was going to come, spring 2020. So maybe that's already in the budget, but outside of that, I don't think AEW should be, signing any new wrestlers until this is over. ROH has stopped running in completely. Nothing's allowed to run in the entire country of Japan, Europe. I don't know anything about. I don't believe any lucha in Mexico is still running. Yeah, the only people running are WWE and AEW, and they're going to be running on skeleton crews, just to churn out television.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird spot that we're still in, and we're going to be in for a while. And I guess we can kind of turn to the product now. Because there was a SmackDown and a Raw in between our last recordings. And hell, even in NXT. Was there anything from NXT that was worth talking about? Now that I'm thinking about it, I know that we didn't really plan on talking any NXT necessarily, but
I don't feel like there was anything from NXT that warrants talking about. I mean, I really don't feel like it was a. I mean, the main thing that from NXT is with Pete Dunne stuck in England for the foreseeable future. Instead of having yet another tournament taking place over the course of NXT, they decided to just say that Matt Riddle was going to select his new his substitute partner for the tag team championships, and that turned out to be Timothy Thatcher, a vaunted British and independent star who fits the bill of the deadly serious guy who has to put up with Riddle's antics well enough.
Yeah, I wasn't terribly familiar with his work. Like, I always laugh when I hop on Twitter, and it's just like, oh, and people are going to pretend like they know who this guy is, and I'm like, I don't know, were a bunch of people pretending to know who Timothy Thatcher was? Like, I feel like I'd heard his name recently. I'm not sure I'd seen any of his matches, but it's pretty easy to get your name out there these days and to at least have some type of recognition. I didn't understand the indignation on Twitter, other than the fact that it's Twitter and I should expect indignation on there constantly.
Yes, yep, you absolutely should. Yeah, no, I'm not ultra familiar with Thatcher, but you know, he fits the bill that they were looking for Riddle's partner here in the mixed match duo category. So no, other than that, I don't know, I can't really recall much from NXT.
Fair enough. I was zooming through SmackDown to see if there was anything. Oh, yeah, there is definitely at least one thing worth talking about. The fact that my girl, Kent State-owned Dana Brooke, suddenly getting a push out of the blue.
Yeah, that was interesting, and getting the win over Naomi, who is of almost all of the women seemingly most built for what they're doing at Money in the Bank, as far as both, you know, ladders when they get to the top of the roof, as well as, you know, all the stunts and everything that they could do to utilize the office setting. Instead, you put Dana Brooke in the match, who can do a handstand.
I keep on every time, because I feel like they gave her a couple of matches around the Royal Rumble. Maybe it was before that. I'm like, oh, well, maybe she's improved. And then I see her match, and I'm like, nah, it still just looks like someone who was kind of told what to do and then just went out and did those things in a match. Like, there's never any pizzazz to her moves. Like, and I don't even know if pizzazz is the right move, like, or the right word, but it just never seems like she has, like, and I guess I can't find the right word for it. Like, she just seems robotic, maybe, is a good word for it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, no, there's just, yeah, there's nothing to Dana Brooke, and there never really has been. It's really not worth trying, especially at the expense of someone like Naomi, who, when she returned in the Royal Rumble, and at least in the weeks afterward until they killed her off again, was getting incredibly over, and, you know, and has been over at various points, and can do cool things in a match like that's going to happen at Money in the Bank. I'm kind of dumbfounded at the push of Dana Brooke, and then her and Carmella get a SmackDown get the women's tag title match on this Friday's episode. It's a little too much Dana Brooke for me.
Always like the sight of Dana Brooke for my eyeball purposes. I don't think she's, like I said, I guess I've already said it, I don't think she's improved as a wrestler, and it doesn't seem like she's learned anything in the meantime, so I don't get why she's getting the push, because, like, yeah, that is another thing that, and you kind of noted it, like, Naomi's physical talents have translated into wrestling. Like, you can see her natural athleticism. And even though Dana Brooke did, you know, some misfitness stuff and things of that nature, like, that stuff really doesn't seem, whatever natural athleticism she had has not moved over into the WWE at all. So, yeah, oh, and then I guess more with the ladies, Fire and Desire, Sonya Deville, Mandy Rose, officially parting ways, Chris, all over Otis. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it. I cannot believe that Sonya would say those things and try to keep Mandy from being happy with Otis. That was, disgusting. That's absolute. No, but no, no. It was no. It was effective. I mean, this whole thing has done its job. Some motivation wise, I'm not entirely sure why Sonya went to such great lengths to keep Mandy away from Otis, and with Dolph Ziggler. And you know, so there's just issues with motivation wise, but I also, you know, Sonya Deville really did, you know, nail her promo in, you know, in the jealousy and, you know, why she feels the way that she feels about Mandy. Mandy's still, you know, Mandy Rose was good in her role, and yeah, no, it's been a fun undercard storyline. You need those.
Yeah, I struggled a bit with Sonya Deville's, I guess, conviction in saying the lines. The logic to them made a lot of sense. It was another one where I guess this is one where everyone's like, oh, you can tell the WWE is scripted. And it just kind of felt that way to me. With the way Sonya was talking, especially with the way Sonya was talking, that they were just lines, and it wasn't something that she kind of felt. Even though it does make 100%, like, why wouldn't she be pissed that, like, it was always like, Mandy Rose, and hey, Sonya Deville's on her tag team. So you would think that it'd be easy to... maybe a little bit easier to manufacture that outrage. Not that I think that either of them was... I'm trying to think if either of them would get pushed as singles competitors. Because I feel like they started to do it with Mandy, but then they held back for some reason or another.
Yeah, Mandy Rose has gotten one or two singles pay-per-view title matches. Over the course of her career, I know that Mandy and Sonya, of course, have, you know, had their shots with the tag team titles, but never were women's tag team champions, which is interesting. That, you know, one of the only solid teams there have been since, you know, last couple of years of WWE, and you know, they just, you know, never got to have that to have that run before they broke up, I know it's been talked about the two of them breaking up at various points, and Sonya Deville would have been the babyface, and Mandy Rose would have been the heel, and they had been doing things to move into that direction, like last summer, I believe, and then dropped it cold. I think we've actually talked about that here before, and then, but now, yeah, no, they believe that Mandy Rose can be a star babyface.
Definitely, her pairing with Otis, definitely, like, similar to the, what's her name? Alexa Bliss pairing with Braun Strowman. Where I feel like Alexa Bliss had mostly been a heel and you kind of felt like she was really suited for that. And then all of a sudden you get all this Team Little Big stuff going on. You're like, oh, I can see the baby face in there. And, I'm not sure that Otis has necessarily brought it out of Mandy, but the fact that she's with Otis just kind of makes it so. You know, like, if she's with that kind of not heartthrob, you know, that's one of those every guy has a chance now. Even though they don't have a chance.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, that ended at SmackDown, so I think those are about the major talking points from SmackDown. Raw, wow, we got a whole lot of Zelina Vega on Raw this week. Yeah, that was the one thing that I learned.
Yeah, we got a lot of Zelina Vega and a lot of women's matches. 5 women's matches in all. Over the course of one night of Raw, as well as all 3 of Zelina Vega's men in action, and multiple promo segments and commentary segments for one Zelina Vega, who is essentially carrying Raw at this point.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that that's a good thing. Like, I'm okay with people, especially heels, being extra defensive and shouting down the announcers. But, man, she really seemed a little over the top, more so than normal, in those settings to me. And it almost just seemed like she just wanted to yell at people without listening to them, and I don't know. I guess I just didn't like it. Like, it wasn't entertaining enough for her to, like, she didn't really feel bitchy about doing it, I guess. It just felt stupid to me in a lot of the instances. You know, she wasn't even trying to deflect a genuine point. Like, it was just like she was just not answering just intentionally to be combative. Did you get that feeling at all?
I think that, especially while she was on commentary, she was told to annoy Byron Saxton. In much the same way I believe the Street Profits were told to annoy Jerry Lawler. Vince does love making his commentators uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just another thing we can chalk up to Vince-ism, as far as that goes. You know, I guess it just, to me, it doesn't really seem to fit her character to be that kind of the bitchy that she was being in that instance. Like, they're trying to make her sound cold and calculating, but then they kind of just make her sound like she's ranting all the time. And I guess it's, to me, a little bit of a difference in character that doesn't help her at all, I don't think. Well, and having her men lose 2 out of 3 matches does not help at all either.
No, that part does not help at all. You know, if you're going to build a whole show around this stable, they need to start getting some wins, and I don't mean squash wins like Andrade got. I mean, you know, all this big talk from Zelina, and you know, and her boys lose when it counts. Yeah,
I did have to laugh that she was in that awkward position that, well, it was a different sort of awkward position for her, where she's having to commentate about Austin Theory while her husband was wrestling Austin Theory. So, yeah, I guess she couldn't really be upset about who actually won that match. because the WWE at least still has faith in her, man. But yeah, I was trying to think, there was another segment in there. Oh yeah, Ricochet and Cedric Alexander got put in the same position. To me, at least in a similar way, in that they're trying to hype them up, but then Jerry Lawler just is, you know, has the easiest job of shutting down Byron Saxton and Tom Phillips, going, "Hey, those two guys lost last week. And it's just like, where do you go after that, you know? Like, you have nowhere to go. And, I mean, Austin Theory and Angel Garza, as much as at least they've shown enough potential to be on the main roster already, like, having them lose pretty much clean every which way but loose right after they start isn't going to do anything for them at all. Like, it's just like a whole new cycle of, is Angel Garza going to be the next Primo Cologne? I mean, is it too early to start that discussion?
I think it's incredibly too early to start that discussion.
I do too, but that's how you start that, though. You know, I mean, that's how you start down a road like that, though, by screwing up initial pushes like this.
Oh yeah, no, I agree completely. Yeah, no, what they've done, you know, the last 2 weeks is build so much around Zelina Vega and her stable, and in the end, they lose. This is not how you build a new power stable. No, not at all. Especially one that they're relying on so much and through so many different segments that, you know, there was no need to have Angel Garza lose to Drew McIntyre. Absolutely not. No need to have that match.
Oh, no, because
if anything, maybe Garza should have switched Garza with Theory and had Garza go into Money in the Bank and Theory lose to Drew McIntyre. Because Theory, there's just nothing there. This is a classic too soon call up for Theory.
Yeah. I don't know how long Garza's been wrestling, so I don't know if he would be too soon. I mean, I know that he hasn't at least been on WWE TV for very long. And again, I think I always default back to Jeremy having liked Austin Theory for quite some time. So I guess I will believe his thoughts on him and think that he has potential for the time being. But he's had very little. I mean, you know, I've had very little personally to base anything on. For Theory, other than like 3 or 4 matches, and it's not like he exactly had barn burners, and then he was put into some random tag team match because the WWE just wanted to fill time for WrestleMania.
Right. Yeah. No. But no. I do feel like Garza really should have. Garza would be better suited, and it would do more for him to be in the Money in the Bank match than Apollo Crews. Apollo Crews is one of those guys who maybe probably just narrowly missed, you know, the cut. Who I don't know what you do to rehabilitate that guy.
Yeah, he is certainly on the list of probably damaged beyond any real salvaging. And I don't...
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, it was just tough. Like, I don't know why... They've just started a push for him again recently, which is always kind of mystifying, because I think this is like his 3rd or 4th. And I mean, I really should be putting push in air quotes, because basically his pushes have been like one win and then 3 consecutive losses against someone important, and then that's the end of it. But it is more TV time than he's gotten otherwise. And, yeah, that's one that, at least when I see the in-ring work, I'm like, man, this guy's great. Like, I don't understand why he isn't positioned better. And I guess I don't feel like he has the promo problems that, let's just say Ricochet has. You know, I feel like he's strung together some okay promos when he's gotten a chance. But yeah, if he had been on the list of releases, it would have not been shocking to me. But yeah, here we are. We got Apollo. Yeah, I was going to ask if you thought Apollo Crews being in the ladder match was more of a surprise or Dana Brooke.
Probably Apollo Crews, because we know that they still at least try with Dana Brooke every once in a while, but it's been pretty long time since the last time they seriously tried with Apollo Crews.
Yeah, and like I said, I guess I felt like they had kind of at least kept him on. Because when did he move to Raw? Like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I want to say. Was it?
Yeah, I think something like that. Yeah, I think they, you know, they did something cute and didn't really, or just decided to make a move and didn't really to not really explain it. But yeah,
right.
Because Apollo, he's been on the main roster a really long time, right?
It's probably been 4 years, I would imagine.
I was about to say that, because I remember he got a decent push at the beginning. I remember a match between... I remember him getting an Intercontinental title match against The Miz at SummerSlam, I believe, that year. Because that was the impetus for the infamous Talking Smack episode, where Daniel Bryan and The Miz went off on each other. Because Bryan talked about how... One person that match impressed me, and it wasn't you. And you know, blah blah blah. But see, but that's how long that they've had Apollo Crews on the main roster. As you said, it's been 4 years. I believe he was called up. You know, right after WrestleMania 32.
Yeah, it says main roster debut 2016.
God, there's just it's gonna take a long, sustained push to get anything out of him at this point. And just throwing him in the Money in the Bank match, the entire Raw slate of Money in the Bank, you know, first the qualifying matches and then who actually won it. It's just all wrong to me. It's all three baby faces. No one all that interesting. I mean, Ray, at this point, Ray does not need to be in a match like that, or, you know, or at least give him something to work with in that match, you know. Give him Andrade or Angel Garza, who he's been feuding with, you know, at least.
But, yeah, like, actually shut the door on that feud instead of, yeah. Hey, everyone DDT'd everyone on the concrete. And then no one says anything once they all finally get back from their various injuries, suspensions, and whatever else was happening with that trio of people. You know, because I kind of felt like Ray had gotten injured, or maybe it was Andrade had gotten injured the first time they feuded a few years ago, and I just didn't feel like they ever really capped off that feud that time either. Who was the third guy other than... Because it was Ray and Apollo and...
And Aleister Black, who I'm okay with being in this match, but I'm still it just does not feel like they are not loading up this Money in the Bank, at least on the Raw side, with any viable stars who can win the thing.
Yeah, it's already generally, even if I only see half of half of a prospective match, I usually think, oh, there's at least one or two guys that can win it. And I guess Aleister Black would be my only choice. Like, among those three baby faces, Black is the only one that I would think might win it. But we've always talked about how it suits having a heel win it.
Yeah.
So I do think that that's always kind of the hard part with any babyface winning these matches, is that, they'd have to be hot enough for them to get the briefcase. And Black does fit that bill, I guess. Like, I'm not sure that he's that hot. Like, well, it's kind of hard to tell who's hot and who's not, since they're just... And maybe that's something that it's more of an esoteric topic that's worth kind of talking about. I would have thought I would have seen maybe less weirdness out of the WWE in general, since they don't have a crowd to play off of and they just have to base things on how they feel like they should be doing them. And it almost doesn't feel that way, you know? Like, I guess I shouldn't expect anything different from a crew of people that have been doing things one way for a very long time to kind of change their stripes just because there's a pandemic and they're not performing in front of anyone at this point. But I guess I did for one reason or another. Maybe that's my mistake. And what, are they going to do the SmackDown side this coming Friday for the Money in the Bank match?
They're going week by week, it seems. I don't remember what the Money in the Bank match is for. I know on the women's side, there's a Lacey Evans Sasha Banks match. On the men's side, I actually have no idea if they announced a Money in the Bank qualifying match. I want to say that they did. Let me look and see if there's anything. I want to say I want to say that there's a SmackDown Money in the Bank match qualifying. There we go. Drew Gulak versus Baron Corbin.
Oh. And isn't
Daniel Bryan is already in the match.
Yeah, yes. Daniel Bryan's in the match already.
So you could definitely the match definitely needs two heels, really. And
desperately.
So I guess Corbin is gonna get a win here, and whatever they're gonna do the next week.
Oh, well, and I guess we can talk about this part. And I think I might I might need to bust out some drawing utensils for this. It is the corporate, how are they wording it? Corporate?
Climb the corporate ladder.
Yeah, climb the corporate ladder. And they're going to be inside the Stamford building, fighting to the top.
Yes. Where there will be, I believe, a ring and ladders stationed, and then you climb the ladder just to grab the briefcase. Yes. Still no word on whether or not how they're going to do this. If they're going to do it as two separate matches, or if it's just going to be a 12 person madcap scramble, all the way to the top with both briefcases hanging over.
Oh, well, that actually, if both matches were hold on, is it two or three matches?
Two.
Okay, because it's just the women's and just the men's?
Yes.
I would be more for that. Like, that actually has some weird comedy elements that might be able to come into play if they did both matches at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, reading up on it, doesn't sound like what they're doing, but they haven't totally explained it either.
Oh, no. I mean, I was about falling over laughing. Just like, it was one of those ones where I'm like, oh, you guys have no idea what the fuck you're even going to do, do you? You're just calling it this right now, and eventually an idea is going to hit for how this is going to work.
Actually, I don't even know. I mean, it might have already actually been taped.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess if it was already taped, maybe they do, and they're just, but to me, it felt like the classic, they had no idea what they were planning. Well, I guess they would have had to, if they taped that match, they had to have taped these, segments previously, correct? Like, before that match took place?
I would believe so. They're doing these things on the dead of night or in secrecy, so.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things that I just felt like the way they were not describing the match. Like, oh, you've got to fight from the first floor to the rooftop to get the briefcase. And I'm like, well, how's that work? Like, and if everyone were smart, wouldn't they just agree to at least get up to the first, or get up to the roof first and then start fighting? Because then at least the briefcase is within, you can grab it. Like, is there any reason to attack your opponent on the first floor? Do you feel like there's a reason to attack your opponent on the first floor?
Probably not. No. You gotta get your running start first.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's probably the way they're gonna play it, and they're probably gonna have some wacky shenanigans involved on every floor that they're invariably probably are gonna think is funny and is not funny at all. Like, they're probably going to have people working in their cubicles, which is going to be weird. Do you think it's going to be empty?
It's probably going to be empty. I don't know.
Well, I guess that part just hit me. Like, I hadn't really thought about that part. I was thinking to myself, oh, they're going to have all these weird, wacky shenanigans with, you know, the corporate employees, but you can't really have that right now.
No, you really can't, and you shouldn't. I mean, it's, a lot of it is going to be, I'm sure, you know, doing, you know, moves and throwing each other through into various setup parts of the headquarters, you know, conference rooms, offices, you know, the gym, you know, kitchen, whatever, you know? Yeah, something like that.
I mean, I guess I'd be more interested in this match possibility if they hadn't fought through the Performance Center twice recently on TV. Like, I guess there's just nothing that is really drawing my attention to this match being different than any other hardcore match. Like, I guess you can call it whatever you want, but like, there isn't like, oh, there's this cool balcony that they can fight off of. Like, their corporate headquarters is just a giant glass box. Like, there isn't a cool balcony, there isn't anything, like, the entrance doesn't look grand or anything like that. Maybe it is, I guess, on the interior, and I just haven't really seen it. But I guess there's just nothing drawing me into this match whatsoever to do it, other than to, you know, I mean, it's just like you're doing it just to do it. And I mean, I guess I should I have more faith in them after what they did with AJ Styles and Undertaker, and even the Firefly Funhouse matches? Or am I right to be completely concerned that this is stupid?
I think that they deserve a benefit of the doubt after what they did at WrestleMania. And I think we've also seen that just doing ladder matches in front of no people at the Performance Center is also kind of stupid.
Oh, well, this is true. And I kind of forgot. That was one match. Because was the tag team title match on SmackDown a ladder match?
No.
Okay, it was just a regular match. A regular triple threat match, which means no DQ. Okay. I guess I was just saying, for whatever reason, my mind stumbled over into Big E / New Day winning the tag team champions when you mentioned that. And it just kind of hit me about it. Yeah. Anywho. Is there anything else to cover from the corporate ladder match or anything else that the WWE's pulled out in the last 7 days?
No, I think we hit it pretty good.
Okie dokie. Well, beverage of choice, bell time beer of choice for yours truly. Insurrection Ale Works, just like Mom used to make. And I'm trying to figure out which, Imperial Milk Stout brewed with chocolate chip cookie dough. I'm not sure that I could tell you the chocolate chip cookie dough is in here. Definitely has, a chocolatey, hint to it in the, stout department, which is not, terribly surprising. There is a little bit of chocolate in there more times than not, but, this one kind of has a little bit of a heightened, chocolate flavor to it. And any beer that is 8.5% alcohol is pretty good by me. If you happen to be in Pittsburgh, maybe you can pick up a can or 12 of these. I do know that when we went there the last weekend that anyone was allowed to travel in states around me, a lot of people were stocking up on this beer for these such occasions. So, I don't know how much Mom sold, but she definitely sold to me. So, that is the Bell Time Beer choice for show 563. I'm at Frang11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
Later.